Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings, Ma'at-Hotep. Welcome to another segment of New Day, Resurrection and Liberation. My name is Empress Chi, and I thank you for tuning in tonight. This is going to be a very interesting program. Interesting, but also very heartfelt. It's heartfelt because tonight we're going to pay a special tribute to Dr. Khalid Abdul Muhammad. We also call him the General, and just Doc. I mean, there's so many names that he has been called in a beloving way. Of course, there's a lot of names he's been called in some other ways too. But for us here, we hold his memory and his spirit in a very deep and a very appreciative way, which reminds me, before we begin our program tonight, we always give thanks and praises to our Creator, and we are always cognizant and appreciative of our freedom-fighting ancestors. We chose to talk about our brother Khalid tonight for several reasons. Of course, this past week was the observance of his Earth Day, January the 12th to be exact. And, we felt that it was more than appropriate to really talk about him and to remember him. And we wanted to give our people the opportunity to share some of the stories that they may have, some of the memories that they may have about him, but also to hail him up, to salute him, to continue to connect with one another in the way that he would want us to do. There's a lot of things we're going to talk about tonight in regards to Brother Khalid. Of course, the great contribution and work that he gave us and that he provided in terms of teaching and guidance. Warrior par excellence. I mean, that's all I can really say in regards to that. I mean, you know, the highest salute has to be given and the highest respect. So tonight what we're going to do is we're going to open a chat room up in a few moments. And for those of you who are interested in posting, please feel free to do so, communicate. We're talking tonight about Dr. Khalid Abdul Muhammad, and we're talking about his contributions, his achievements, his brilliancy. We're going to also talk about some of the controversial stuff as well. Certainly his transition, shall we say. We're going to talk a little bit about that. But we're going to also talk about the celebration of his life and the continuation of his work. So we want to remind you that at 11 o'clock, we will open up the lines for those who have comments or questions or something you'd like to share in regard to our brother Khalid Muhammad. I'm going to open the open mic up for you tonight at 11 o'clock, and in a few moments, you'll be able to go to the chat room. Right now, what we're going to do, though, is we're going to go to something. We're going to do some of Dr. Khalid's speeches tonight. We're going to do some of the early ones first, and then we're going to go to some of the more up-to-date ones or some of the last ones, as they may say. And also, I want to remind you that a little later on, we are expecting Chairman Fred Hampton Jr. to call in. We spoke with him or communicated with him a little while ago, and apparently there's a shooting that occurred today in Chicago where a brother was shot 15 times by the cops. So Chairman Fred is at a meeting as we speak, but we are expecting him to call in a little later on to give us an update in addition to some other things. In the meantime, let's see, what we're going to do is we are going to, as we said, we're going to go to the, I think, some of the recordings that we have or some of the speeches that we have for Dr. Khalid Abdul Muhammad. What we think we want to start with is, again, some of the earlier things. So give us just a moment. We want to cue some things up for you. In the meantime, we want to remind you that you are in tune to New Day, Resurrection and Liberation. And we want to also remind you that you can give us a call beginning at, what time? 11 o'clock. And at that point, you can use our mic to express your views and so forth and so on. So we're going to get ready to go to our mic, and you're going to hear Dr. Khalid Abdul-Muhammad in a few moments. But before we do that, we want to share this with you.
Put out my records.
All right, come on, go ahead.
I'm sick of begging for him to treat me it's all about waking up, everybody. It's all about y'all putting pressure on y'all entertainers to wake up y'all business.
That's right.
We got to wake up. Now, I ain't going to stay up here anymore. I want to bring up the best man for the job, one of the best men for the job, because he's looking, Louis Farrakhan, who is the best man for the job right now. So my job is to point you to him so he can point you to the lead. And his name is Dr. Khalid Muhammad.
Yeah. Provocateurs who
join our organizations and work against the legitimate aspirations of our people who yearn to breathe free. Drug dealers and others will make when they are thrown gracefully face first into open manholes. When niggas love revolution like they love the Bulls, Nike will no longer be able to sell $160 basketball shoes in the black community, because we would rather spend the money on liberation and revolution. Thank you. When niggas love revolution like they love the Bulls, they would love it. They will love it more than chitlins, more than all my children, more than Jerry Carroll, more than permanence, more than Cadillacs and Mercedes Benz and Rolls Royces and BMWs cars. When niggas love revolution like they love the Bulls, when niggas love their family like they love the Bulls, when niggas love their children like they love the Bulls, when niggas love to be free like they love the Bulls, when niggas love struggle like they love the Bulls, when niggas love dignity like they love the Bulls, when niggas love niggas like they love the Bulls, we become black people and all the bullshit will hit the fan.
My name is Michael Rose, Rastafari.
My name is Puma.
My name is Dr. Simpson.
I'm Sly Dunbar.
My name is Robert Shakespeare.
What's the matter, people?
Solidarity. Solidarity. Everybody wants the same thing, don't they? Everybody wants a happy end. They want to see the game on Saturday. They want to be somebody's friend. Everybody want to work for a living. Everybody want their children warm. Everybody wants to be forgiven. They want a shelter from the sun.
Look at me, I'm the enemy. He walks in common ground. We don't need to fight each other. What we need, what we need.
Solidarity.
man and woman, then it is no wonder that police brutality is to the level that it is in black communities all over America. The cold-blooded murder of Brother Aswan there in Brooklyn just a few weeks, months ago, shot 20 times, 21, 22, 23, 24, 25, 26 times. Brother Jerry Lee Aiming in Los Angeles, shot 39 times, over 6 feet tall, shot even on his shoulders, which meant, did the cracker get on a stepladder and shoot him on his shoulders, or did they shoot him and shoot him and shoot him down to the ground and keep shooting him even after he was on the ground? You don't have to shoot a damn elephant 39 times to kill an elephant. And Jerry Lee Amy, as always, as all of us are, was the wrong man. Cracker was looking for a robbery suspect. Jerry Lee Amy is playing with his daughter in the front yard. And as they are running across the front yard, the cracker assumes that he is a so-called fugitive of just us. And so they shoot him down on his lawn in front of his baby girl. Brother Philip Pinnell would still be alive in New Jersey. Brother Lewis there in St. Petersburg, Florida, would still be alive as the crackers rolled up on him and claimed that his car lunged forward, that one was on the side and the other one, what kind of fool this is, I don't know. The other cop was supposedly in front of the car looking through the front of the windshield. Common sense would tell a damn fool, you don't have to be a policeman, that you don't stand in front of the vehicle. But they claimed the vehicle lunged forward. They shot him. The policeman was never hit by the vehicle. The vehicle never crashed anywhere into the pole or anywhere on the side. Brother Lewis would still be alive if we understood this dynamic better than we understand it. Our brother in Johnny Gamage in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, who was there in the suburbs of Pittsburgh, and the crackers said that he stepped on his brakes and his brake lights came on too many times. His brake lights were blinking too many times, and so they snatched him from the vehicle, and all of them jumped on top of him and beat him and choked him until they choked in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, Brother Johnny Gamage to death, Sister Eula May Love, and the many that are from the New York area, from the New Jersey area, from Chicago, from Los Angeles, from the South, and throughout. All of them, brothers and sisters, victims of police brutality, and we don't even have the time to name all of us killed at the hands of brute beast police. It was former Supreme Court Justice Thurgood Marshall who spoke at Howard University, sometimes called Howard University. And as he spoke there, he said that the Ku Klux Klan, that the white paramilitary right-wing organizations, the Nazis and others, that the Klan no longer just wears white hoods and white sheets, but now the Klan wears blue uniforms, carries a badge or a shield and a legal, quote-unquote, weapon. That the Klan now wears black robes and sits on the judge's bench to rule from the courtroom. And so Thurgood Marshall, having been a Supreme Court justice, too afraid to make bold stands himself, but in a sense like the spook who sat by the door, on his way out, he could begin to give up a little bit of the truth. And right here in New York, we have Judge Bruce Wright. And as we read his book, Black Robes, White Jesters, in Black Robes, White Jesters, Judge Bruce Wright gives us the inside track on the criminal justice system of the white man. And never call it a criminal justice system unless you...
You are tuned in to New Day Resurrection and Liberation. We've been listening to none other than our shining black prince. Dr. Khaled Abdul Muhammad. We're going to hear more in a few moments. Right now, a little bit from Dead Prayers. The line is open if you care to express your views, give a comment, share a story. Hail up, Dr. Khaled Abdul Muhammad.
You know how we say, organize the hood on the I-Chain banners. Red, black, and green instead of gang bandanas. FBI spying on us through the radio antennas. And I'm hitting cameras in the streetlight, watching society. With no respect for the people's rights to privacy. I take a slug for the cause like Huey P. While all you fake niggas try to copy Master P. I want to be free to live, able to have what I need to live. Bring the power back to the street, where the people live. We sick of working for crumbs and filling up the prisons. Dying over money and relying on religion for help. We do for self like ants in a colony. Organize the wealth into a socialist economy. A way of life based off the common needs. And all my comrades are ready, we just spreading the seed.
To have a black male, live a third of his life in a jail cell. Cause the world is controlled by the white man. And the people don't ever be in justice. And the women don't ever get respected. And the problems don't ever get solved. And the jobs don't ever pay enough.
No more bondage, no more political monsters, no more secret space launches. Government departments started it in the projects, material objects, thousands up in the closets. Could have been affected in the future for my comrades. Battle contacts, primitive weapons out in combat. Many never come back, pretty niggas be running with gas. Rabbit gets shot in their back and fire back. I'm tired of that. Corporations hiring black, denying the fact, exploiting us all over the map. That's why I write the shit I write in my rap. It's documented, I meant it. Every day of the week, I live in it, breathe in it. It's more than just fucking believe in it. I'm holding it one, rolling up my sleeves and shit. It's CeeLo who pushed us now. Many headed for one conclusion. Niggas ain't ready for revolution.
We have this black man, live a third of his life in a jail cell. Cause the world is controlled by the white man. And the people don't ever be adjusted. And the women don't ever be respected. And the problems don't ever be solved. And the jobs don't ever be enough.
We are here, New Day Resurrection and Liberation. My name is Empress Chi, and I hope you are enjoying our tribute to Dr. Khaled Abdul Muhammad. Of course, we are playing music and speeches and information and so forth that we feel Doc would like for us to play. And we're saying that because, as he indicated in one of the earlier speeches that we played, you know, we are spiritual people. Now, some might want to chalk it up sometimes and say, oh, you know, this and that is spookism or whatever, but for real, to get into that is sort of a denial of who we are as a people, meaning our in-depth spirituality. And I certainly bear witness to that, having been in the circle of Dr. Khaled Abdul Muhammad in a very unique kind of way. And I'm going to share my story to some degree of interacting with him. It sort of really kicked off in 1996, in particularly when I began organizing for the Million Woman March. And yes, I did say 1996. For those who don't know the history of the Million Women March, I can assure you, you will very soon, because we are getting ready to do not only publications and a documentary, but also have an upcoming tour, and there's a speakers bureau that is being put in place to assure that the history and legacy of the Million Women March is indeed told accurately and on, shall we say, without being pushed under the rug as it has been over the past 13 or so years. At any rate, Dr. Khalid Abdul-Muhammad was, in fact, the first person, the first brother who I approached to help do security for the Million Women March for 1997. Unfortunately, because Doc's schedule was really kind of crazy at that time and there was a lot of other things going on, he was not able to assist me in the way that I had hoped he would. However, in 1998, after the Million Women March, when I was able to bring him to Philadelphia, I held a press conference to begin helping to organize the Million Youth March. Press conference was held here in Philadelphia that I hosted, and at that point in time, Dr. Khalid Abdul-Muhammad made a public apology to me for not being able to step up as he felt he should have when I requested that he help in doing security in 1997. As a result of him making that public statement, which I felt was, you know, very honorable on his part, we became very close, and he requested that I be a national advisor to him. I also became a national co-convener for the Million Youth March that was held in New York in 1998. And from there, we were able to develop a very strong brother-sister-hood relationship that I'm very proud to speak of today. There are, of course, a lot of other things at some point in time that I'll be able to say a bit more candidly, but for now, I'm just going to leave it at that, and we'll proceed a little later on with a few other things. But what we want to do is remind you that you are in tune to New Day Resurrection and Liberation, and if you would like, again, to express your views or comments or whatever, you can do it one or two ways tonight. There is an open mic right about now, and you can also go to the chat room. You can post anything you like there, especially in regard to Dr. Khalid Abdul-Muhammad. Let's see now. What we're going to do is also remind you that Chairman Fred Hampton Jr. should be calling in about 10 minutes or so. He does have an update for us in regard to a shooting that took place in Chicago, I believe, today, which entailed the police shooting a brother, I think Chairman Fred said approximately 15 times, and when he comes on, in about 10 or 15 minutes or so, he will certainly give us an update about that and a few other things that we're working on. We're planning to bring Chairman Fred to the Philadelphia area next month as a part of the Keeping the Legacy tour. So for those of you who may be interested in having him to come to your community meeting, to your college or school or institution or whatever, if you're on the East Coast side, please let us know. And we will certainly do what we can to make it happen. Again, he'll be coming to the Philadelphia area around February the 18th. We're doing a session here in Philadelphia called The State and Future of Black Philly to begin to really focus on what needs to happen here in the Philadelphia area in terms of bringing forward a real strong black presence, a progressive black presence, not the weak kind of stuff that we've been seeing here for a number of years now. And it just seems to be spreading so widely that it's suffocating anyone and anything that he is even trying to do anything productive, and certainly with a self-determined kind of mentality. So we feel the need to address that. My brother Shingo Wande, of course, from RaceFirst.tv, we're putting together some very powerful pieces that is going to really help inspire, help train. So, again, if you're in the Philadelphia area for the time period of February the 18th through the 20th, there will be a three-day session, the State and Future of Black Philly, and there will be sessions on reparations. There will be sessions on self-defense as well as urban survival and emergency preparedness, health, healing, education, wealth, and finance building, et cetera, et cetera. So what will happen during those 3 days will be really kind of a overview of some historical things that has occurred in Philadelphia over the past, you know, couple of hundred years, actually, because Philly has a lot of history that we want to make sure that the youth today know. So we're going to have sessions that really give insight into some of the great achievements, some of the great people, the contributions here in Philly. Since it's Black History Month, well, we're going to start making sure that every day is Black History Month or day or whatever you want to call it. So we're going to make certain that, again, that the legacy of Harriet Tubman while she was here in Philadelphia, the legacy of Paul Robeson, the legacy of John Coltrane, the legacy of Billie Holiday, all of them lived here in Philadelphia for a period of time. So we want to make certain that our people know and understand the great legacy of Philadelphia, and with that, we'll be able to move forward. Needless to say, the largest gathering in the world of any women anywhere ever took place in Philadelphia. You would never know it because, for whatever reason, many of our historians and scholars and so forth never really talk about it. They don't invite representatives from the national office to their schools or to their conferences or whatever. Yet, the largest gathering in the world with no corporate sponsoring, with no major benefactors, et cetera, et cetera. So this year, we're really making certain that the nonsense ends. And that's why, again, tonight's program is so important and so significant because, as you've heard earlier with Doc, with the various things that he was saying, I mean, it was straight up, right to the point, just truth, period. And that's the way we've got to begin to roll now because it's just too much nonsense going on. And as far as sisters, I mean, you know, and we heard a moment ago one of the cuts from Dead Prayers, and he said in there about the disrespect of the sisters. That, too, has now got to be really, really brought forward in a serious kind of manner. Sick and tired of hearing brothers talk about the greatness and the beauty of the black woman and so forth, yet hating, I mean, seriously hating, you know. So now our brothers that are for real, that are about it, they got to step it up, and they've got to really now defend and protect as they know they should, and vice versa. So those are some of the things that we're going to be talking about in the very near future here at New Day Resurrection Liberation. We're also getting ready to connect further with our sister station, Harambe Radio, and with that we'll be providing TV. Harambe Radio will be providing some TV segments for that starting next month. We're working on that now. Specifically, there'll be some sessions for youth, a couple that we know will be dealing with reparations, the history of the Million Woman March, and also food preparation class for youth and young adults. So those are a few of the sessions that we're working on this end. And before we go back to our brother, Dr. Khaled Abdul-Muhammad, we want to remind you that this year for the Million Woman March and its movement, it will mark the 14th year anniversary, and this year there will be a major summit in Philadelphia in October. This summit is key because not only will it now allow us to present adequately our plan of action for prosperity, peace, and power, but it will also prepare us now to go international, taking the Million Woman Movement internationally. We'll be talking more about that very soon as well. On February 28th, there'll be a major press conference in Philadelphia to announce the upcoming summit, but also to announce that we are getting ready to coordinate on the national level committees that will help in the organizing or assisting in organizing for the 2012 Million Woman March that's going to Africa. Okay, so February 28th, we'll be able to announce that. We are in the process of getting ready to go into negotiations with the possible hosting cities. And also can tell you that on February 28th, officially, if you were a coordinator, a volunteer, a supporter of the Million Women March in 1997 or at any point thereafter, the official Million Women March Alumni Association will go into effect February the 28th. Now, February the 28th marks the first official call for the Million Women March. In 1997, on February the 28th, the call was made for the Million Women March. Of course, it was made by me on October 28th at the Rain Institute. Only one newspaper came. Brother Raj from the Philadelphia Tribune was the only newspaper that came to the very first press conference for the Million Women March. So it's so much history to really tell about some of that, and we're going to now do that. We can do that because we've come full circle, and we're going to really let you know some of what really happened. You're going to be very surprised to know of some of the madness that occurred and also some of the greatness that occurred as well. But one of the things that you're going to hear later on that Doc talks about is how we have to know our history so that we don't repeat some of the same mistakes, et cetera, et cetera. And that's why we're going to be very candid about some of the things that we feel you need to know in reference to the Million Women March and now its movement, because we want people to understand that we have to now safeguard our history. We have to make certain that we're telling our own story, because if we don't, certainly we know somebody else will, and certainly somebody else has tried, but fortunately we've weathered the storm. We are now able to bring forward what was envisioned early, before 1997 actually, but certainly in 1997 and certainly thereafter. We're now ready and able to bring forward the first global movement for all women and girls of African descent, the Million Women Movement. And we're going to tell you more about that very, very shortly. Okay, what we want to do now is we're going to select one more selection from Dr. Khalid Abdul-Mohammed, and I think after that we will probably be talking with Chairman Fred Hampton Jr. Let's see, what we want to do is we're going to do a little reminiscent, I guess. Classic, of course. Doc, Bill Donahue. Oh yeah, this is the classic one here.
Former national representative of Mr. Louis Farrakhan of the National Guard. Mr. Muhammad is the man who made so many of the front pages of America's newspapers with a speech at Kane College, which so many people called anti-Semitic and a lot of things, at the very least, racist. You remember the comment? He picked up the Pope's dress, and let's see what's under that dress. Here's what you said about Colin Ferguson, the man who shot a Jamaican African, a black male who shot six people on the Long Island train. Mr. Muhammad speaks.
Well, they set black inmates up in the jails and penitentiaries, and in particular there in Nassau County, and pulled all the black officers out and the black inmates so they could jump on Brother Colin Ferguson, because they were mad with him for catching the Long Island train and killing all them white folks. I love Colin Ferguson. No official position, so I can say I love him.
You love a man who randomly killed six people on a commuter train?
I love Colin Ferguson just as much as the masses of white Americans love General Schwarzkopf, General Westmoreland, General Patton, General MacArthur, and Eisenhower. America awards her killers, and they get ribbons and stripes and bars. I'm sensitive to the pain and suffering of the loss of life on that train, but I'm one of the rebellious slaves. And so when black people stand up out of pain and suffering and frustration, I understand after 500 years.
You talk about the response of some African Americans to, for example, the book which attempts to prove that Jews are involved in the slave trade. I'd be happy to let them see that. You talk about when white folks can't defeat you, you said in your speech at Kane, they'll always find some Negro, some boot-licking, butt-licking, buck-dancing, bamboozled, half-baked, half-fried, sissified, punkified, pasteurized, homogenized nigger that they can trot out in front of you. I would ask you, Mr. Muhammad, is Jesse Jackson a boot-licking, homogenized nigger?
To the best of his ability, I believe he tries every day.
Here you are mocking Jesse Jackson at a speech. I believe this is Howard University. Roll the tape.
Oh, bootlicking, buck dancing, scratching, shuffling, messy Jesse Jackson. You keep. I am a somebody. I am a somebody. A keep hope alive. I am a somebody. I don't rightly know who the hell I am, but I am somebody.
Yeah. Are you an entertainer or are you a committed person to black people?
I'm so glad you asked that question. I believe that the liberation and salvation of the black nation must be brought about by black people gaining a thorough knowledge of self after our 500 to 6,000 year Holocaust, where we have lost over 600 million. And so I believe that that education process must be a process of two steps: inspiration and information. So I seriously give information, but black people are a people of rhythm and spirit, so I also give inspiration.
From your speech at Kane College in 1960, Chief Luthuli, the head of the ANC, received a Nobel Peace Prize, you reported to your audience, reminded them, for nonviolent struggle. Just like Mandela just received it with F.W. de Klerk. How could you stand with your oppressor and your enemy and receive the Nobel Prize for nonviolent struggle? You have, you do not support Nelson Mandela's strategy in the struggle to free black people in South Africa?
Let us first of all be very clear here, Phil. Nelson Mandela is my brother.
So
he
Jesse
is a
Jackson.
Member of the family, and so is Jesse, and Jesse is a very brilliant man. We just want him to return home and stop being used by the enemy and the oppressor against his people. Now back to Brother Nelson Mandela. And certainly we can never mention Nelson without mentioning Winnie Mandela. But Nelson Mandela's attempt at a multiracial government in South Africa after the murder of men, women, children, and babies, and the rape of South Africa, a criminal settler colony that has been established, like Israel, there in that part of the world. I cannot go along with one man, one vote. Let me say why. If someone broke into your home, Mr. Donahue, and actually bum-rushed your home, and black boots stomped your door down, and came in and robbed and raped everyone in the household, and was able to take the wealth of your home and parlay it into an empire, This is an invader. This is an intruder. This is a murderer. This is a burglar. This is a criminal. So you have no responsibility to share your home with them after they broke in and committed the crimes that they did.
You want... You said about South Africa, we give him, that is to say white people, 24 hours to get out of town by sundown. That's all. If he won't get out of town by sundown, we'll kill every white that ain't right that's in sight in South Africa. We kill the women. We kill the children. We kill the babies. We kill the blind. We kill the cripple. We kill them all. We kill the faggot. We kill the lesbian. We kill them all. You say, why kill the babies in South Africa? Because they're going to grow up and oppress our babies, so we kill the babies. Are you seriously presenting yourself as a man interested in the future of your people with this kind of rhetoric?
I'm just as interested in the freedom of my people as I am in the self-determination of the Kujichagulia, self-development, them being self-defining, self-respecting, and self-defending. If the white man has killed millions of our people and you cannot deny
That's right.
the undeniable and indisputable and irrefutable truth, fact, proof, and history of their bloodshed there in South Africa. I said it would be merciful if they would leave. I don't agree with a government, a sham government. No man walks out of prison after 27 years and becomes the president unless there's a script and a plan behind the scene to remove the economic sanctions from whites in South Africa. But no real plan for redistribution of the wealth. The Oppenheimers, the De Beers, and others, they're sucking the blood of our people. So I said, be merciful. Give them a period of time.
24 hours.
Truman gave the Japanese a period of time. But when they didn't comply, he dropped the bomb on men, women, children, and babies. I make no apology for that shit. I believe that the invasion of South Africa was an act of unprovoked war. One nation against another nation, and nations must fight for the self-determination. They had no business there, Mr. Donahue.
Yes. Would you like to see Aristide return to Haiti to his rightful, duly elected position as president?
From what I have learned and studied of President Aristide, from what I can see in those I've been privileged to talk to who are close to him, he appears to be a very sincere man. He appears to be a man who really loves our people there and wants to see our people breathe free and correct the problems that colonialism and other disruption is very definitely at the root of. However, Phil, I do not want to see my beloved brother, President Aristide, returned to Haiti by the power of a Bill Clinton, because if Bill Clinton can help to return him there, he will always attempt to be the puppeteer who will pull the strings and try to dictate to my brother how he should carry out the affairs of government there.
All right, needless to say, classic, Dr. Khalid Abdul-Muhammad. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we should be talking with our brother, Chairman Fred Hampton, Jr. Just hearing Dr. do this interview again. I mean, this is one of those interviews that you just can hear over and over and over again and always hear something kind of new if you listen very carefully. I mean, there's always some new lessons there. But we'll talk more about that in a few moments. Right now, we're going to, take a quick break, I think. And let's see. With that said, I think we're going to hear a little bit from none other than Marvin Gaye. We'll be right back.
Oh,
sailed on the ocean, and upon our sea, fish full of mercury. Underground in the sky, animals and birds who live nearby by the night. Oh, mercy, mercy,
mercy, mercy, me. Indeed. Isn't it ironic? This song is like, what, 30 years old or so? And we're still talking about the same things. You're in tune to New Day, Resurrection and Liberation. My name is Empress Chi, and we've been listening to none other than Dr. Khalid Abdul-Muhammad. Tonight we want to do a tribute to him in that his Earth Day just passed. It was January the 12th, and we miss him. We miss him very, very much, especially right about now. You know, it's a very solemn kind of night tonight in thinking about Doc, because those who knew him just knew how much he loved our people, and certainly those who didn't know him knew it too. You know, but the bottom line is we had the responsibility to continue the work. With that said, you know, we're talking about continuing legacies, and that's something that we've been discussing here at New Day Resurrection Liberation for a while now, and something that we will continue to discuss because we have the obligation and responsibility to make certain that we continue the work of our ancestors. With that said, we're going to get ready to go to our live line, and joining us is our brother, and we indicated to you earlier that he would be coming on tonight. He had to be in a meeting earlier from what we learned. And again, we're talking about another police shooting. Now, earlier today, there was a tribunal held here in Philadelphia to talk about police and governmental terrorism. As we indicated earlier, we're going to bring Chairman Fred Hampton to Philly, hopefully around February the 18th and to the 20th. And again, those of you who are in the Philadelphia tri-state area and you have an event that's scheduled, or you're going to make an event, you know, that's Black History Month, we're talking about finding solutions and taking action to deal with this police, whatever they call themselves. The behavior that we're now seeing is off the hook. And again, it's nothing new. You know, we just played Mercy Mercy with Marvin Gaye, and we're talking about 30, 35 years ago. Same things was going on then, same things is going on now. So when are we going to step it up and really deal with what we know we must, as Doc has often taught us? But what we're going to do now is go to our live line, and joining us is, of course, our brother, our warrior, Fred Hampton Jr., and he's going to give us a report on, you know, what's going on in Chicago. Again, we heard briefly about a shooting that took place there. As, you know, all over the U.S., our brothers are being shot, and now our sisters. We got a report earlier about a sister being tasered here in Philly. We'll give you some updates on that, too. But at any rate, we're going to also talk with Chairman Fred about some other things, too, that has to do with beginning to put more codes, black codes of conduct in our community. So let's do this right about now. We're going to go to our live line. And remember, we are paying tribute tonight to Dr. Khalid Abdul-Muhammad. And with that paying tribute, we also take action in what's going on today, because that's what he would want us to do. So without further ado, we're going to go to our live line. And joining us now is Chairman Fred Hampton Jr., the chairman of POCC, and our brother Warrior. Chairman Fred, you there?
I'm right with you, Empress.
Hey, black man, how you doing tonight?
Hey, spirits are strong. I want to say, you know, revolutionary love, respect, appreciation to you, to the people in general. And, you know, thank you as always for giving the opportunity to provide some updates on the work that we're doing on this end. You know, just want to, you know, extend a clenched fist to the forces on that end, because, you know, we battling all over, you know, something, you know, all over. We say we respect no colonial borders. We ain't set tripping. It's like, you know, the system is attacking us everywhere. We got to, the only civilized response is that we got to be fighting back everywhere.
That's right. I No, that's right. So, Chairman Freer, tell me now. I got a message briefly. What's happening? I mean, the message that I got indicated that there was another cop shooting.
Yes. This, let me sure pronounce this brother's name right. Daryl Pixon, late 20s. We convened the funeral today. We've been in an all-day, like, repass slash meeting, you know, just in one of these latest cases of police terrorism.
Mm-hmm.
And this is in on the south side of Chicago, in particular area known as Inglewood. And this defamation that we've been made abreast of already from what we refer to as the POCCPI, that's the People's Investigation that we've implemented. They shot him 15 times. It's a special team that they're not releasing the name of the special team, but it's they regroup after we put a lot of pressure on this one unit and expose all the contradiction with them, like a special SOS unit they had, they called them the Jump Out Boys, and they technically they said they were disbanded, but we found out they regroup and they rap basically. They come in ski mask, and they, as opposed to the regulations where you have to have certain officers, or certain police in a particular district, they're switching these districts. They're bringing other police from different districts in, so a lot of people won't recognize who these particular police are, and moving like occupying army, but similar to the tactics where you see in Afghanistan and Iraq and everywhere else, where they come in with masks on their face, and I mean, it's moving like straight up, you know, straight up hitmen.
Mm-hmm.
And people were telling us that, you know, that even if they shot them, they would, you know, the pigs, they was high fiving each other, bragging about it.
Mm-hmm.
So we've been touching down, you know, forces in the community, so we're gonna be definitely keeping y'all updated on this again on this case of police terrorism.
Wow. And so now, when did this happen?
Five days ago, yeah. It's difficult to even keep up with the number of cases that's happening, you know.
Mm-hmm.
The sad reality all the same is it's happening to the extent that I hate to say this, a lot of people in our community starting, you know, you see this as being normal, you know.
Right.
And I said before, as Asada Shakur said, that one, you know, with being oppressed, we must struggle,
mm-hmm.
to, you know, to distinguish normal from abnormal, you know. So we can't start to accept this as a normality, you know. So that's a battle that we're dealing with now. So we're just trying to organize a number of these forces, you know what I'm saying, and continue to keep the sting in it, you know what I'm saying, of police terrorism, and not even refer to, you know, get caught up in, again, that euphemism that people refer to as police brutality.
And, right.
You know, struggle
right.
to put this correct context. This is an occupying army that's getting out in our community.
Well, Chairman Freer, I don't know if you've heard, but this is a very interesting development that's happening on this end. Camden, New Jersey is roughly like 10 minutes out of Philly. You cross the bridge and you're in Camden, New Jersey. In 3 or 4 days, the city of Camden will lay off half of their police force. 170 or 180 police officers will no longer be working. Now, the reality to that is this. While, you know, we say the less the better, but see, the reality is this, and people need to pay close attention, because about a year or so ago, there was some kind of stuff going on in another part of Pennsylvania called Chester. They ended up calling the National Guard.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So now, what we project is, with Camden being, note, the second highest crime city, from what we're told, the second highest crime, murder capital almost.
Yeah.
Okay? So now, why would they be taking 180 cops out?
Mm.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So this thing is getting so deep now.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
You can see, and we've been talking for years about these plans of them putting into place New World Order, or whatever you want to call it, martial law, martial state, or whatever. Literally, they're pulling out 100-something cops out of Camden. You think they're going to sit back and just let stuff happen? So we think that this is going to end up being a testing ground.
Yes. No doubt, enough.
Because either they're going to privatize some stuff,
yes,
or they're bringing in some other troops. One or the other.
Yes. And, nothing is all good, nothing is all bad. But I think back to, like, even when in response to Hurricane America, a lot of people refer to it as Hurricane Katrina. a lot of forces had struggled, in response to the government referencing our community as refugees. But and hear me out on this. But the positive aspect of it is what it does. The state to start using blatant war terms, in reference to our people, and they start making it very clear with their position about us in this. Because we have, in our communities, I'm talking in the black community in particular, there is a war that's being waged on us that's kind of like, for lack of better terms, an undeclared war. It goes under the euphemism of war on drugs or war on gangs, and they use code words and references to us, like, the hip hop, they're attacking Generation X on and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
But when they attack other forces, they make it very clear. So you hear these different military terms. So in some sense, and I hate to say it, but in some sense, this is a necessary stage in the game that we have to go through and struggle. Where they start, this front, this facade is dismissed. Where they start making it very clear, again, that there is no war on drugs, war on gangs, it's a war on our people. And I mean, I wish you can get to the point that they don't even say terms like, crack, cocaine, heroin. They just we can up the ante. That they be upfront that this government implemented chemical biological warfare waged on our communities. And, as opposed to the police, there's an occupying army placed in our communities. And sometimes it takes this while people recognize that we have no other choice but to struggle. You know what I'm saying? Because we can. I'm not a masochist. I don't like our people being oppressed. But we look at situations in the '60s under the class peace, under the era of John F. Kennedy, who ran this whole facade, but having this liberal relationship, with the black community, but all the time behind closed doors.
Mm-hmm.
His brother, who was attorney general, implemented the wiretaps on Dr. King. It was John F. Kennedy on his administration, implemented the Green Berets on his administration, flooded the army tanks, through the ghettos, throughout the communities. However, when such organizations as the Black Panther Party was talking about this war being waged on us, there was this liberal atmosphere, and it took this criminal, Richard Milhouse Nixon, to come out point blank and say, under the campaign of law and order, and be up front with you about, the whole thing about the heroin and the methadone. There was a war being waged in the community, and we've seen an increase of the resistance in our communities because we were forced to become clear that this government, it has nefarious intent, bad, when it comes down to our community. So that's bad, but it's good, they start using these type of war terms, refugees, so on and so forth, because they're making it very clear that, look, this is how they feel about us.
Well, my brother, needless to say, we got our work cut out for us, and the thing that is becoming more concerning to me is that, to me, we always kind of knew who the Negroes were, just to put it very simply. We always knew who the buffers were and so forth and so on. But see, nowadays, people who have some real level of consciousness and some teachings and so forth and so on, I'm now finding that, these people are being maneuvered, manipulated, and even willingly allowing themselves to operate against us, cultural people, people that's running around with garb and, kinds of stuff. And I mean, and it's amazing to me to see some of this now, because before, you just kind of knew who folks were more so, now?
Well, we must remain principled and understand that things, conditions and circumstances are ever developing. And as Che Guevara, the Cuban Revolution, stated, there's no permanent friends, no permanent enemies, permanent interests. We must remain committed to our principles, you know what I'm saying, that we fight for liberation of our people. We can't become subjective, you know what I'm saying, or become liberal about, you know, whose friend, whose feelings we don't want to hurt. And, you know, again, it's ever-developing, you know what I'm saying. You'd be surprised at what, you know, position certain forces take. We got to, you know, well, we can't be liberal. We must understand that this government, that they not only hit us with bullets, machine gun bullets, or artillery, but they also come with Chairman Mao Zedong referred to as sugar-coated bullets. They come with concessions and compromises. You know what I'm saying? You know, they compromise people. They are sending forces in to tell you that it's not an act of war, but it's a active entertainment. We've seen this in the during the era of Garvey, when they brought certain entertainers in to hijack, you know what I'm saying, and counter what Marcus Garvey's putting forward. We've seen this during the era of the Black Power Movement, with certain entertainers and fake spokespersons were brought up to hijack, you know what I'm saying, the real deal agenda. We just had a situation a few days ago in where they had, right in the city of Chicago, where the infamous powerful Daily Machine is attempting to up the ante, and they brought Rahm Emanuel, who is an international gangster,
mm-hmm.
who was Barack Obama, was, before that was Daley's, Richard Daley's chief of staff. And out of his arrogance, I mean, he had one time, he told the Congressional Black Caucus, F the Black Caucus, to meet with him. That's how he felt about these individuals. So you know how he felt about the masses of black people. And he just took he's a major Daily player. He's his connection with Israel, not only with his biological brother, but his father was in his Israeli Defense League, and it goes on and on. But he was brought from Barack Obama's chief of staff recently to be brought in to be the mayor of Chicago, and this is an attempt to up the ante with the Daily Machine. Now, out of all people, they bring in, recently, a few days ago, Jennifer Hudson.
Mm-hmm.
To perform, now note this, to a free concert. But this, he's past billionaire, for a fundraiser for Rahm Emanuel at the House of Blues. We protested, and it exposed a lot of contradictions.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people got engaged in their liberalism. Well, she lost her family, you know, negating that she's validating this Jennifer Hudson, this Pied Piper. For imperialists. That's what there's a lot of these entertainers out there. Pied Pipers. They they want to, you know, sing and dance up to the gas chambers, you dig. And she does this benefit, this fundraiser. She, first of all, you know, she has never done anything, you know what I'm saying, for the mass, for the black community.
Right.
Nothing
right.
for the community that came out there and expressed their sympathy
right.
for the situation with her family, which everyone, you know, believes, including me, that it's deeper than what they're putting forward. In fact, deeper than what regular criminal case they're trying to put forward. Even that, people are suspecting this political. She has never done any benefit for the community, but all of a sudden she comes in and does a benefit for Rahm Emanuel, House of Blues. This Rahm Emanuel at one time was over at the CHA, the Chicago Housing Authority. Under his tenure, masses of black people were kicked out of their homes, you know, up and down State Street on the south side of Chicago under his leadership. Some of the funds they raised the other day, he's already announced that $5,000 of the money is going to go to the Chicago Police Department. And we have to, and it's the same tactic that this criminal Slave Z, a lot of people call Jay-Z, when he did his record release, he donated the money, the funds, to the police, the New York Police Department, to the same New York Police Department that stuck plungers, you know, up the rectums of black people, you know what I'm saying? And then we try to be liberal with this, and this system, they capitalize on the emotions of the people. I thought about this when we went out there and protested. I said it's similar to like a comedian said somebody brings up, a singer comes out on Apollo to perform, and they say, well, first of all, I want to thank my Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. And then people say, well, we can't boo her because we born Jesus Christ.
Right.
And that's, so they bring this Pied Piper, Jennifer Hudson, this criminal out here, and people get sidetracked. You know, engage in discussion. We should be engaging in. You know, well, man, what about, you know, she went through this loss. That does not validate or let off the hook. You know what I'm saying, for collaborating with this, you know what I'm saying, and playing, validating this criminal inside our community. And so we have to call the question, you know what I'm saying, and a lot of moves that we do, our principal moves, in their difficult moves. And Minister Dewey Penn said, being a revolutionary is difficult because a lot of times you must fight in the interest of the people, even when they don't know their own interests. And that's a difficult position to take, but we're going to remain committed to that. And we don't care who they send in, whether it be, in fact, this Tuesday, they're bringing in a lot of these other people's first black president, Bill Clinton. He's coming in Chicago to support Rahm Emanuel. And we will be out there with the same fervor, the same spirit to protest him. You know what I'm saying? So, again, we don't care if it's Warren Buffett or Slave Z. We don't care if it's Bill Clinton or Jennifer Hudson. We don't care if it's Uncle Sam or Sambo or the Gringo or the Negro. If it don't meet the needs of the people, we're going to expose it and move accordingly.
I know that's right. Well, speaking of entertainers, or, you know, of course we have some other names for them, and we talked about this before, Chairman Freya, we've got to, at some point in the very near future, talk about how we're going to approach that person. What's his name, Lil Wayne?
Yes, indeed.
There's no way that we can sit back and not say something very serious about, you know, what's going on with that. Him and there's another one. I've been getting emails and messages about some of the lyrics that, not just some of the lyrics, but apparently some of the interviews, too, that they're doing about, you know, our women.
Yeah. Well, that whole Little Slave, and when we refer to them as these different names, it's not, we say even the names, we refer to them as political.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like you know, even in our communities, a lot of the police, the pigs in our community, like they, a lot of times they have these superhero names, you know what I'm saying, like strong man, so on and so forth. We try to tell guys in the community, don't refer to them as some sort of heroic names, you know what I'm saying? And it's because even the names and the terms are political, you know what I'm saying? So when I be referring to these criminals as Little Slave and Slave Z, it's not just no subjective slander. It's just a strategic move to expose, regardless of how many resources, how much money these punks got. You know what I'm saying? They got freedom of speech as long as they don't say the wrong thing. You know what I'm saying? These punks don't write. They ghostwriters is not even a word. That's being liberal by saying they have ghostwriters. I mean, you'll be surprised at who pulls the strings and literally, directly or indirectly, write these punks lyrics, tells them what they can say. You know what I'm saying? When they can say it, you know, how they can feel. And I don't know even how deep they connected. You know, we were just talking about in our last political education classes, this video footage about the Illuminati, and they grab some of these entertainers and stuff, these Star Spangled Slaves, and majority of them narcissists, have narcissistic characteristics, and they feed them what type of position to put out to the people. And I tell you, we can't be liberal saying, well, it's just a music, it's just a song, or it's just a song he's saying. And if you listen to what they say, they've been letting that position be known. Like, Easy. A lot of people, years prior to it being exposed, we didn't say it was no coincidence that Jerry Heller, you know what I'm saying, and the rest of these criminals, you know what I'm saying, picked this dude Easy and worked him like they worked him. And then when they were saying such lyrics as, I'm a nigga for life, I'm not about that black stuff, so I'm not going to sing. I'm not going to sing that gotta be nigga for life. I was struggling with guys then. They go, oh man, just a song, Chairman. You're making a big thing out of nothing. Then later on, when the infamous beating of Rodney King by the LAPD was exposed, people were surprised when Easy said the police were not wrong. They were just doing. They had to do their job. They had to contain Rodney King. So we must look at what these. The writing is on the wall. Look, the Slave Z, this punk Jay Z. The fact that he is the name of his record group is called Rockefeller in New York.
Mm-hmm.
We look at this criminal Little Slave in New Orleans. Who at one time he should have never felt comfortable to do a video in around the Ninth War. You understand, where they would take shutting down the St. Bernard Project where people stopped. I'm talking about before Hurricane America. And this criminal was bragging doing a video with a mink floor in a Rolls Royce car, a mink floor. These punks should not feel comfortable. And I, you know what I'm saying, so she didn't get to the stage. In the game, we say derogatory thing. He said about how he feel about dark-skinned sisters or black women, period. The way a relationship starts, the way it ends. You know what I'm saying? The checking got to come in the beginning. You know what I'm saying? These criminals should not feel comfortable, whether they perform on stage in New York, whether they perform in a benefit for the New York Police Department, or make a benefit for some other ruling class institution that has no connection to the community. They should not feel comfortable.
You know, and it's so funny that you're saying that, Chairman Faye. We started off earlier tonight with our tribute to Dr. Khaled, and we were playing
long live Dr. Khaled.
Yes, indeed. You know that's right. And it just so happened, though, when we started off earlier, we were playing a speech that he did, but opening up was Ice Cube. And Ice Cube was talking about how he was so thankful that Doc had showed him some guidance that his father never showed him.
Mm.
Okay. So I find it real interesting in retrospect. You know, of course, you know, we see what Ice Cube is doing now. I'm not sure about what else he's doing, but at least at one point in his life, he was talking about.
No doubt about it.
You know,
we must not deal in absolutes. We must understand, as a criminal psychologist said, behavior is affected by consequences. Again, we can't take out of context in the 60s. A lot of people try to, you know, make this big thing about James Brown, you know, about him saying I'm black and I'm proud. That just didn't happen. It was movement. It was representatives such as H. Rap Brown, not only Man with Jamil Alameen, as representative of the Black Power movement that drove down on James Brown. James Brown had a whole different song planned initially. Drove down on him, put the pressure on him. He came back out to him, I'm black and I'm proud. He would have never pulled that stunt he pulled it on the Rocky movie, wearing red, white, and blue drawers, living in America. Conditions,
right.
We must understand that. It was movements in place. You know what I'm saying? Richard Pryor was impacted by the Black Panther Party. He talked about when he met Chairman Fred in Chicago, you know what I'm saying, to sit down with him, to provide a donation to the Black Panther Party, and the support he wanted to provide for him. We cannot negate, this is not detached from the political impact and political influence of revolutionary organizations, so we must understand that. Later on, Dr. Khaled was talking, they said he couldn't even get in contact with Ice Cube. These, you know what I'm saying, so we must be, don't deal with absolutes. And I tell a lot of people, be talking to me like, Chairman, I've been seeing you work with these different artists. I said, don't get it twisted. I done projects with some of these artists. Like, you know what I'm saying? You know, these are friends, not comrades. To my man, there were certain moves we had to do strategically, you know what I'm saying, to force them to take the fall. But they don't, now they own volition don't get in contact with us. I done a piece with this young lady, Shauna, called Ghetto Fairy Tale, who's the daughter of Buddy Guy. Buddy Guy did a benefit for the Black Panther Party in the late 60s.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a movement in place that, you know, seen that won these cats at some point in unity. You know, Shauna won't return a phone call now. And I'm not saying this on a subjective thing, but Tupac talked about how, you know, he came, he thought, you know, Janet Jackson, you know, it was like a friend thing, or, you know what I'm saying? He said he couldn't get in contact with him no longer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the whole politics of this whole, you know, these entertainers in Hollywood, this whole politics of it produces a facade, you know what I'm saying, like a fake type situation. We must understand that, and must understand that, again, people must understand that movements force, you know what I'm saying, the dog wags the tail don't wag the dog. Streets make the music, music don't make the streets. You know what I'm saying? And don't get caught up in absolutes because a force does commits a revolutionary act to get engaged in absolutes. That they some sort of, you know, that they doing this on their own principle, you know what I'm saying? Anyone you can pull out, you know what I'm saying? That was the POCC that sat down with Kanye West 8 hours before he said what he said about George Bush. That was who sat down with 8 hours before he said that.
Wow.
We must understand that. And put in this context. And I'm saying it not in some sort of ego-tripping type of way.
Mm-hmm.
I'm saying that so people can understand the necessity that we have movements in place that can set a climate where it's conducive for Marvin Gaye to go against Berry Gordy and the Metallica gangsters who really ran Motown Records and say, I'm going to put out the song, What's Going On, Whether You Like It or Not.
Wow. See, this is the kind of information that we really need to, you know, be more aware of and have more access to, because it's very important.
That's how we got to approach them. At the Hip Hop Summit, when they came to Chicago, we were waiting up in the hotel on Russell Simmons Restaurant. They thought we was jiving. They had a whole layout. Their plan was to bring in the regular spokespersons, you know what I'm saying, the usual suspects. Bring them in, play some loud music, and, you know what I'm saying, run some game on the people. We told them what happened. We, you know what I'm saying, we up to ante with them, you know what I'm saying. And when they got them, Ludacris, His mother was acting, was operating in the capacity of his manager. She tried to run this whole thing. That's how Ludacris is doing something for the community. He has a Ludacris Foundation.
Mm-hmm.
And we said, you're exactly right. That's what it is, the Ludacris Foundation. That's just, you said him out for this tax write-off. You know what I'm saying? We said that Bill Cosby, Oprah Winfrey stuff, they don't hold no water with us. You know, so we out here dying in these streets. And we up there, we say, man, y'all want to take a position of supporting or acknowledging this African anti-terrorism deal? We have, man, artists like Twista out of Chicago. His manager is a guy named Wall, who is plugged with the state, who, you know what I'm saying, who does not want this guy to say nothing progressive. We told Twista point blank, and we told him in no uncertain terms, we understand and we know that Viacom, Universal, and the rest of them gangsters, they got their foot in your back. We up here now. You know what I'm saying? You're going to take some position with this African anti terrorism bill. That's what made him change his tune. You know what I'm saying? We must understand, as a criminal psychologist said, behavior is affected by consequences.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. No doubt. Well, family, we are, as you can tell, have an extended version of our show tonight because we wanted to make sure we were able to get Chairman Freed on. So we're going to go up for another 15 minutes, and we are here live. We're talking with Chairman Freed Hampton, Jr., chairman of POCC, and, of course, our street warrior, our movement warrior. And as indicated before, we are planning to bring Chairman Freed to Philadelphia around February the 18th through the 20th, somewhere in there. And if you are interested in having him to come to speak to your group, please feel free to let us know. You can contact nationalmwm@aol.com, or you can reach Chairman Freed directly at chairmanfreed@gmail.com, Chairman Freed?
Yeah, Chairman Freed Jr.
ChairmanFreedJr@gmail.com. All right. Okay, because, you know, when we talk about Black history, of course, we know that that's every day. But since, you know, a lot of people are more in tune or more able to do some things during that month, we want to definitely make sure that we have our people available. So, again, the Legacy Tour, we're talking about that, plus how we have to move forward. Our ancestors have already paved the way, given us our assignments, okay? We just got to now step it up and activate what we know we need to do. Chairman Freed, one other question I need to ask you about, since we do have a little more time. We extended our show for tonight. We talked a couple of days ago about something that was on the Internet. And, of course, we were able to forward that over to you so that you could examine it. Mm-hmm. And you want to give us a little report on what your findings were? And, family, we're saying this because one of the things that we're talking about in addressing our street codes of conduct and also our movement codes of conduct, and that is how we've got to begin to start watching one another's backs a little more. And so what I mean by that is, if you see something out there about Empress Chi and it sounds strange to you, okay, you need to backtrack that and make sure that it's accurate or that it's coming from me. In other words, a lot of times I see stuff about Million Woman March, and it amazes me. And normally we're able to nip it right in the bud. Somebody will send it to us, and we'll check it out. So what we're saying, again, is that in this situation, got some information. It talked about Deputy Chairman Freed Hampton, and then at the bottom it had Chairman Freed Hampton Jr., and it just didn't look right. So we knew immediately that we needed to call that in and have it checked. So that's what we're talking about. And we're putting it out there to you because that's how we need to do one another. We need to make sure that we can watch one another's back. So, Chairman Freed, what did you find out about this situation?
I want to reiterate point you made about the whole importance of us being connected, and a certain telltale sign that we can see, or code words we can see, you know, questions the legitimacy of certain, you know, pieces or
mm-hmm.
statements about, you know, individual organizations, you know, that people in particular, those of us who are engaged in the struggle, but the people in general must also be able to, you know, to understand this, because it is so important to protect this, because as Malcolm said, he said when he said they, he's talking in reference to the system. Just, you know, when they can't stop it, they will attempt to co-opt it, water it down, change it, make it something it ain't to be, you know. And this is in response to you contacting us, give us a heads up about an interview that was done, you know, ironically on my birthday, but it was supposed to have been about, you know, saying about the legacy of Chairman Fred, which was an interview with my, with Chairman Fred's brother, my uncle, and also author of a book that we have not validated, an attorney, not an attorney for the Black Panther Party, or as many people are under the impression of, but Jeffrey Haas, you know, of a book that is titled "The Assassination of Fred Hampton." Again, and that's on cold words. That, you know, saying, like, even how we struggle to put him in political context as the chairman of the Illinois chapter of Black Panther Party, that give people a heads up on, you know, where does this come from? Mm-hmm. And there's been an intensified effort that by so many forces who we couldn't, when it was not popular to talk about Chairman Fred, you know what I'm saying, when the system was dismissing the Black Panther Party and its respective individuals as, you know, nothing but, you know, a hate group or a gang members, so on and so forth. You know, it was, you can count on your hand the amount of people that were fighting them, you know, to maintain this legacy. When it becomes popular, we see all of a sudden there's this concerted effort, you know, saying to take, you know, saying to water down the various campaigns, as well as, you know, saying what the Black Panther Party was. Campaigns such as, you know, with this interview, some people say, let me play what I call state's advocate, not devil's advocate. Let me play state's advocate. Some people may take the position, well, as long as the information is getting out there, we should just be happy about that. Black Panther Party said information is raw material for new ideas. Information is raw material for new ideas. It is so important that we, you know, we've been addicted, you know, saying cross our T's and dot our I's. In this piece that we did, this in question that we talking about, that there was I can't recall this brother's name who did this interview, but they devalue and liquidated such campaigns as the Rainbow Coalition, which we fought for years to get people to be clear that it was not Reverend Jesse Jackson that organized the Rainbow Coalition, but it was Chairman Fred that organized the Rainbow Coalition. When he done it, it was a revolutionary act when he took such groups as the Young Patriots, a group of poor whites at the Appalachian Mountains, the Young Lords, a Puerto Rican organization, and many street organizations such as the Disciples, the Vice Lords, the Black Star Rangers, and won in some point of political unity. As soon as we kicking through the door, getting people to be very clear, you know what I'm saying, who is Chairman Fred, you know what I'm saying, the Black Panther Party organized this phenomenal coalition. We see on this interview the other day in court, you know what I'm saying, and they're trying to put this book that some people are promoting, that the coalition was liquidated, just a group of people just coming together, different nationalities just coming together. And it's not saying the Black Panther Party that the black people and were the vanguard, the leadership. It was not just some liberal get together and hold hands type coalition, but it's an effort, you'll say, again, to change history. And we can't cut our tongue. We can't bite our tongues on it. We got to call a question. And in so many instances, they will grab with legacies, whether it be revolutionary organizations or hip hop groups. I mean, they particularly strategically go grab Flavor Flav, like you call him Flavor Flav, to throw him on this show to co-opt the whole legacy of Public Enemy. You know what I'm saying? And
right.
The other day I was doing an interview with a young brother in elementary school, and his mother, she said, because she heard about the work we do, she kept calling me, so okay, we set the interview up. And she was saying, well, I really want him to interview you because, you know, it's so important to get it from the actual people. She said, because she had the year prior, he interviews someone else in Emmett Till's family. And what he had said was, I think it was Emmett Till's uncle or something, he said that there was another book written about Emmett Till, and there was so much falsehoods co-opting a certain situation, blatant. He said, matter of fact, I don't want to be liberal. He said, well, lies. In the book, and he said, and it hurt him about the different people, like even in his family, that validated certain things. And he said that's what motivated him. He had to write his piece. He said, you know, because it was stuff that he knew wasn't true, you know. And I said, wow, I got to use that quote, you know what I'm saying? And I got to check myself and be self. I keep on saying, you know, I'm gonna start documenting, you know, putting this stuff down. And it is so important. It is so important, you know what I'm saying, that we, you know, the way we tell what went down, how it went down.
That's right.
And, you know, and, they say in the war, you know, he who wins the battle, you know, so writes the history. But we say the battle is still going on, and we, you know what I'm saying, and we can't engage, and they grab certain forces, you know, that, you know, and it hurts. Mm-hmm. You know, I heard bits and pieces of the interview. I've seen a strategic attempt, you know what I'm saying, to devalue the role of my mother comrade, the widow of Chairman Fred, and which I'll be like, you know what I'm saying, who was in the room. I say it jokingly to her one time. I said, you know, it's good that the Chicago police came in their uniforms that December 4th, 1969. And she said, why do you say that? I said, I could imagine if they didn't. If those same individuals took their jackets off, there would be debate right now, well, how you know the police assassinated your father? I said, it's also good that you did not step out the room for 2 seconds to go to the bathroom.
Mm-hmm.
I said, because I've seen so many individuals took to write her out of history.
Mm-hmm.
His widow, his comrade,
mm-hmm.
she was 8.5 months pregnant. She climbed over in the context of security to cover the body for Chairman Fred. This 18-year-old, 8.5 month pregnant woman that inside that room. And there's been a concerted effort by the government and by so many other forces to liquidate her role. You know what I'm saying? I consider myself fortunate to have fallen from the tree of two freedom fighters. And I've seen so many, you know what I'm saying, all of a sudden when the gunshots stopped ringing, when the yellow tape was gone, the smoke was clear, all these different individuals pop up and they're suddenly spokespersons and they're, you know, when it's going down, you're like, where are these people at?
Mm-hmm.
And I mentioned the other day, I said, you know, in my demise, I said, man, I want my spirit to, I want to come back, you know what I'm saying, to continue to haunt not only the oppressors, but any opportunists, you know what I'm saying, who went around, who were doing no support, who had a grandstand on my grave, you know what I'm saying. I hope I just did to come back and haunt them again. You know what I'm saying? Because when you're out here battling and fighting, you can't. You know, I tell people, when Malcolm was alive, you couldn't find any people support him. You know what I'm saying? He was attacked.
Right. Mm-hmm.
You dig? Mm-hmm. But you know what I'm saying? Later on, it becomes a safe subject. You know what I'm saying? Because people they come back to try to kill you again. It can't be said no better than that. They're trying to assassinate Chairman Fred again. They still shooting.
And see, with that said, my brother, we only have a few minutes left, but that, too, is also the spirit of Dr. Khaled Abdul-Muhammad because, you know, the teachings and many of the things that Dr. Khaled said are some of the things that you just also echoed and that, you know, we got to keep the spirit of our ancestors moving forward.
Mm.
We've got to embody their teachings and got to make this thing happen. You know, we must remember the work, the effort, the time, and the lives that have gone into this thing we call African liberation and struggle. And so, you know, needless to say, my brother, I want you to know that I appreciate you and certainly your mother.
Your sentiments are reciprocal.
You know, it's a wonderful thing to be in this day and age and to be able to, you know, embrace and to bear witness, you know, to seeing the legacies continued. So, you know, while we know that many are observing Dr. King's Earth Day this week, and most certainly they should, you know, we just decided that we would do something a little more along the lines of how we're focused, and we appreciate all of our ancestors, you know, other people are going to push forward the people that they want be pushed forward for us. So it's only correct and incumbent upon us to bring forward those who we know they won't.
No doubt.
So, my brother, I want to thank you again, and we're going to close out tonight again with some last words from Dr. Khaled Muhammad. Last words only for tonight, of course. course, we're going to be coming back in the very near future, and you're going to be hearing more about him and Deputy Chairman Fred and Chairman Fred Hampton Jr. and so forth and so on. Chairman Fred, thank you so much. I know it's been a rough day for you, and I appreciate you taking the time to call in. And we're going to talk later on this week and start working on getting you here for next
month.
Look
forward to it. If it ain't rough, it ain't us. In revolutionary love and respect to the Empress, keep doing what you do. Power to the people.
No doubt. Thank you, my brother. All right, family, we're going to leave you with a few words from Dr. Khaled Abdul Muhammad. Much love and respect, and we'll see you back next week. This is Empress Chi. And, hey, power, prosperity, and peace. Remember, there can be no peace without Ma'at. Tutanana.
The goal of a national election is the bullet or the bullet. That's my subject here tonight. The bullet or the bullet. You don't have more of the choice. Some of you are waiting around. You were glued to the television screen, watching these two no-good weapons debate just a few nights ago. You are trying to make up your mind which couple who are you going to vote for. This is the year of the bullet or the bullet. You don't have no choice. One second named Bill Clinton, nicknamed Slick Willie. Would you buy a used car from a trucker named Slick Willie? An adulterer. Doesn't even live up to the standards of his own nation. A draft dodge. A dope head. A cracker who gets tired and then wants to fool you and hoodwink you and tell you I didn't inhale. A dope head. An adulterer. And one who doesn't even follow the standards of his own people. A draft dodge. A Slick Willie. Lied to you 4 years ago. Still lying to you 4 years later. And another crack. An old wrinkled, crippled, crazy crack. Cracker with a funny head. Shaking people's hair with his left hand. Then you tell me I'm voting for this cracker. Some of you for president. And the damn Peckerwood can't even stay on the stage. The cracker fell off the goddamn stage. Out in the audience. Can you imagine you're supposed to get off of Air Force One and salute the Marine Corps and salute the Honor Guard when you step off the plane? Now, what will this cracker do with this running head? What is he going to do? Get off the plane and try to throw up a salute with that funny hand? Some of you say, why be so personal? Why not attack the man's policy? Why not attack the platform that the man stands on? Don't deal with the man's personal life. Don't deal with him. Deal with his policy. But I'm a military scientist. And in military science and military strategy, you don't just attack the tank. You attack the fueling depot that the tank depends on. You don't just attack the train. You attack the track that the train runs on. You don't just try to deal with the cracker once the plane, the bomber plane is in the air. You attack that which is responsible for giving the plane what is necessary in its power and energy to lift up off the ground. And so I attack the cracker too. And his policy. You're talking about civil rights. Ain't no damn civil rights. The cracker ain't never been civil and he ain't never been right. You're talking about, well, what about human rights? The cracker ain't human and he ain't never been right. It's the year of the bullet. Or the bullet. You either deal or die. You either fight back or get destroyed. You either get on the right side or it's genocide. It's the year of the bullet or the bullet. You've been voting for crackers ever since they allowed you to vote. And tonight we want to cover some of the history here. The history teaches us that from 1870 to 1901, blacks served in the various states as congressmen and sat in every Congress from the 41st to the 56th, with one exception. Says they were brilliant men. They were great orators. In fact, during the period of Reconstruction, we were mayors. We were sheriffs. We were senators. We were congressmen. And even B.K. Bruce was in the Treasury Department. And his signature was on all paper money in America. No matter how racist a cracker was, a thick, pot-bellied, beer-billy, snuff-dipping, tobacco-chewing, straw-chewing, overall-wearing pecker wood, no matter how much he hated niggers, he had to handle currency and money that had the signature of a black man in the Treasury Department on it.
I don't know.